Morgen.
Good morning, and I'd like to welcome you to the Faculty Governance Hosted Riffline on Next Generation and Probationary Faculty. I'm Barb Barker. I serve as the Senate and University Committee. And one of the roles of Faculty Senate is to ensure that our faculty rights are honored and that our responsibilities, one of them includes informing faculty members of decisions and policy changes that affect them. I also want to let you know that Andrea Kuhl, who is UW Extension's Secretary of the Faculty and the Academic Staff, is online this morning. She, along with our academic department chairs and members of UC, have been instrumental in sharing questions and sharing information about our faculty rights as the Next Generation Project has been implemented and discussed. So we appreciate hearing your questions and your concerns so that we can bring them forward, and we ask that you continue to share your questions and concerns with us. This morning, Dean Carl Martin will review the information from the email that was sent last week about Next Generation and Probationary Faculty. As he reviews these decisions that have been made, he's going to include some information from the questions that were asked either on the Dean's List line in the chat box last week or emails that were sent to me. We ask that he will take a pause or a break as he goes through that information, and we ask that you ask relevant questions to that particular information at this time. We know there's lots of questions out there, but we want to help to facilitate a process so that our focus continues to be on the topic that's being discussed. Some of the questions are additional information in regards to those recommendations. So as we take a look at that, we are following that. And then we also provide an open time for additional questions following those questions that were sent in. So this morning, Carl is available until 11 o'clock to respond to our questions and share information. We also ask that if you have a specific question that is related to your personal situation, that you send that information to Andrea Kuhl. And we will share, her email is available in a variety of resources. We'll also share that at the end of today. Also joining us, Carl, today is Tricia Gorby, who is the Project Implementation Coordinator, and she will be working on a frequently asked questions type of document to contain the information from today's list line. So I'd also like to remind you, if you do have an open mic and have not hit your mute button, if you could please do that at this time, we'd appreciate that, because there is a lot of background noise going on at this point in time. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Carl, and Carl will begin the discussion.
Thank you, Barb, and good morning, everyone. The goal for the communication was really to answer a lot of questions we've been getting over the last couple months, so we wanted to try to address these questions as soon as possible since they have a significant impact on our probationary faculty. What I'll do is I'll just kind of run through quick the documents that was sent out, but then I'll focus more time on going through specific questions that have been asked, trying to answer those, and as Barb said, asking for follow-up questions related to those specific questions. So the focus really is probationary faculty and how probationary faculty fit into our new model moving forward. The plan is that probationary faculty will proceed as usual from July 1st through June 30th, 2018 for those who are eligible. I should point out that tenure will continue, and we will continue to have tenure track and tenured faculty in the new model. Eligible probationary faculty include those who have completed their fourth year of service. So those faculty that have completed 4 years can submit their tenure portfolio per the normal processes and timelines for the fall of 2017. The fall of 2017 is under our current model. Our model changes January 1st. So as I said, there will still be tenured faculty that will continue to go through the process in the spring of the year. As the current practice, I'll recommend to approve, hold, or deny as appropriate those portfolios that are submitted and the recommendations from the Faculty Tenure Advisory Committee. Obviously, those that's a recommendation from me. That actually goes to the provost, and ultimately the chancellor makes the decision on tenure. Current probationary faculty can apply for either tenure track positions or academic staff positions when they're rolled out in the new model later this year. Those probationary faculty who would accept a new position would be issued a new contract for that position. Any of those that, any probationary faculty that receive tenure prior to us moving to the new model on January 1st would be considered tenured faculty within cooperative extension, and then would have the rights of a tenured faculty member. So at the end of the hiring process, those faculty, probationary faculty members who are not hired into the next generation model, either as a faculty member or as an academic staff member, will be non-renewed, and they'll be given an appropriate notice of non-renewal. And that notice is 3 months for those who are in their first 12 months of faculty service. I don't think we'll have anybody that'll meet that time frame, as I think we've held vacancies for a longer period than that. There'll be a 6 month notice period for those that have 12 to 24 months, and if you have at least 12 months, if you have at least 24 months, then you would get a 12 month notice period. I'm guessing most, by the time we get to January, most of our faculty would fall into that 1 year notification period for non-renewal. I think that kind of covers the main points, and I think we'll get into a lot of the details as we go through the questions. So I'll go through the first question. I'll kind of have my answer, and then if there's additional questions around that specific question, we'll deal with it at that time before I move on to the next question. So the first question, is the process of tenure closing on December 31st, 2017? So the process of tenure, as I said, will continue for those probationary faculty who are in faculty track positions in the new model. The projected timeline is to have that new model in place by the end of the calendar year. So for now, we are projecting the new model will be implemented by January 1st, 2018. Are there additional questions around that?
Carl, this is Blondie. That seems a bit contradictory when you talk about a normal tenure process this fall. Certainly within the Department of Ag and Life Sciences, and I think it's consistent with the other academic departments as well, the normal tenure review process begins in September for us, is the first SRP committee review meeting, then there's another opportunity October, November, and then there's one in January as well before, you know, the deadline to get to the Faculty Tenure Advisory Committee kicks in February. So when we talk about a normal tenure process and yet somehow this January 1 cutoff date, that to me isn't normal. So if somebody can't apply after, so is FTAC going to be, the review period going to be changed at all this fall to accommodate potentially a lot more reviews? Just some real questions, some uncertainty around that.
Yeah, and I would agree with you, Greg, that this isn't normal. And a lot of what we're going through as an organization, I wouldn't say is normal at this point. But I would encourage the departments and FTAC to take an aggressive approach this fall, knowing that that deadline is looming at the end of the year. You know, we have to at some point move to the new model, and I don't know that there's any ideal time to do that. You know, we had talked about July 1st being that timeline, and now we've pushed that back, and I think rightly so, to January 1st. But I'll acknowledge that it's going to require a heavy lift on both the department's SRP committees, but also on FTAC to move through those this fall.
So if I could follow up, really what drives the timeline is always kind of working backwards. So when we look at July 1 is, or typically is June, when a Board of Regents would take action on a tenure recommendation, things have always kind of moved back from that with the Dean and the Provost Chancellor's review prior to the Board of Regents, and then prior to that, of course, prior to the Dean's approval, the Faculty Tenure Advisory Committee process, which then obviously follows the academic department. So when you say December 31st is being kind of the deadline, are you, at what point in that process are you declaring that deadline, where the departments have to have completed the review and made the recommendation to FTAC, or where FTAC has completed the review and made the recommendation to you, or where you've made a decision and provided recommendations to the provost and chancellor's office? That kind of clarification is needed to adjust our timeline.
Yeah, I would say it's the latter, that I have provided a recommendation to the chancellor's office, and understanding that that I'll have a very short period of time to do that also. This will put some expectations on the dean's office to move that forward by the end of the year. So yeah, it's a very accelerated timeline. And then again, there will be additional probationary faculty that will likely be going through that tenure process next spring who are in those faculty track positions. But I think, you know, if you're looking at implementation January 1st, 2018, you have to know who you have in the organization and what their role and positions are and the number of tenured faculty that we have in the organization. So it's not ideal, but I think it does the best job of balancing our timeline, the reorganization with trying to be accommodating to probationary faculty, trying to be as clear as we can in allowing that process to move forward.
One other follow-up then, and this speaks specifically to, you know, an eligibility tenure timeline anniversary date. So our bylaws, department, I think it's institution bylaws, say that someone has to have completed 4 years on the tenure timeline. So that means their probation or their anniversary date or appointment to the tenure timeline would have had to have occurred before they submit. So, you know, getting this deadline or getting actually the calendar, if you will, of this review process established is going to make a big difference to some folks in their fourth year who may or may not be eligible.
That's correct. So the portfolios need to be based on 4 years of work at UW Extension. So therefore, a probationary faculty member would need to have completed their fourth year of service prior to submission.
Right.
Maybe to help understand from what Frank's getting at is, you had mentioned that the tenure process will continue into the spring, or and that's where the confusion, at least in my mind, is. Does that mean that if someone 4 years, if they started in April, do they have an opportunity to apply for tenure then, or is it that they don't have an opportunity to apply because the 4 years ends at December?
It really depends on what position they're in. So if they're in one of those tenure track positions in the new model, they can apply in spring of 2018. If they're not in one of those tenure track positions, then obviously they would not be able to apply for tenure in the spring of 2018. So we're operating under the current model through the end of the year, and then we're under the new model starting January 1st.
So it sounds like if SRP's latest 2017 meeting is in November, people would have had to complete their fourth year by November.
whenever that date is. So I guess that depends on when departments, and they have to realize, again, like Greg said, you have to back that up to make sure that gets to FTAC and to the dean before the end of the calendar year. So some of it, how much time is needed to do those reviews.
And in that regard, Carl, it would be really helpful, since FTAC serves at your pleasure as an advisory group to you, we, from a department standpoint, before we can establish SRP review dates, we will need to know what those FTAC, your advisory committee review dates will be. And once those are set, we can then work backwards from that as a department and set our department review dates. And once those are set, then individual probationary faculty will be able to determine whether they're eligible or not.
This is Barb, if I can interject for a moment. The scholarship forum, which involves the Faculty Tenure Advisory Committee, as well as each of the academic departments, Standing Rating Promotion Committee, are planning on meeting, and the date hasn't been announced, but they're planning on meeting in June to go through some in-service training as well as discuss some of these situations. The other recommendation I would make is if you have something about an individual person's timeline in that, those questions should go to Andrea Kuhl, and she will help you to work through that and talk through you how your timeline works within the current process.
Can you say about the in-service training?
It will be for the Faculty Tenure Advisory Committees as well as the Standing Rank and Promotion Committee members. So that is who the meeting, the scholarship forum will be for. That's for the intended audiences, and that will be held in early June.
Thank you.
This is Mike Walwig, and just to add a bit more to that, so at our university committee a few weeks ago, there was a recommendation made that FTAC meet in both November and December. Historically, it's only been in November, but with the anticipated larger number coming through, and then it's up to the FTAC chair and committee to set those dates. And I'm anticipating one for November and one for December.
Can we get an estimate of how much time you think you'll need, Carl, to so we can back up from the end date?
I think I would like to have those from FCAC no later than mid-December. I think I'm going to, it depends on the volume, but I'll probably need a couple weeks to go through those and move those up through the provost to the chancellor. That seem reasonable?
I guess, this is Gary in Waukesha. I guess I understand the urgency to draw a line and put an end date on this and then move into the new model. My question is, though, that once Dean Martin receives them in mid-December to review, then they go to the chancellor's office, and they won't be acted on by the regents until June. Because it's my understanding that the regents vote on all tenure decisions in June. So they're going to be sitting there several months without being granted tenure until the regents make the final decision. Is that correct?
That's correct. But I don't think the regents have ever rejected a recommendation for tenure, at least not that I'm aware of. So I think the real test is going to be the FTAC, Dean, Provost, Chancellor that would occur in December.
Carl, Mike here again, and just a point of, I guess, clarification, and I think this is important. So through this tenure process, by the end of the year, assuming the individual, meets the scholarship requirements, et cetera, the person would be granted tenure whether the position is is, I'll say, in the old model or the new model?
That's correct. So for this fall, we would be operating under the old model. That doesn't necessarily mean that that position, specific position, remains in the new model. It means that that person who received tenure has a position moving forward. And what that position is, that's a whole separate process that we need to work through.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Carl, this is Ruth Schrieffer. And you did mention that probationary faculty who get notice, many of them will have a 1 year's notice. Will probationary faculty who get notice be able to apply for positions that open up during that year?
Yes. And they'd be able to apply for, my understanding, I'm still working with Jason on this, is that they would be able to apply for those academic staff positions in the new model, because those positions would be significantly different than their current position. So yes, they would be able to apply. So we could see turnover occurring within that year and actually creating more opportunities within the organization for those individuals to apply for those positions.
Thank you.
I have a follow-up question on that. This is Loretta Orchard-Jervink. So maybe I misunderstood what you said earlier. I was under the impression that probationary faculty were not going to get a notice unless they did not apply and get accepted for either an academic or a tenure-track position. So am I misunderstanding? So then if we do, are we all going to still get notices and we apply?
No, that's correct. I think what Ruth was referring to was those who did not go either of those two paths, they would have a year notice period, and during that year, they would still be able to apply for some of those positions.
Okay, thanks for clarifying.
Well, and Carl, just related to that, I got an email. When would those termination notices be sent? Would they be sent at the end of the hiring process, or would you wait until July 1st of 2018?
They would be at the end of the hiring process, and that would tie into, obviously, those tenure decisions. So a lot of that would occur later in the year, later in this calendar year, and maybe into early January, depending on the tenure decision.
Carl, this is Greg again, and I've talked to Andrea about this. There seems to be some question with existing UPG, at least UPG 11, which regards, I think, personnel actions, where it makes a statement about faculty. And I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have it in front of me, but faculty that aren't successful in achieving tenure cannot be reappointed to an academic staff position. Has there been some clarification on that? Because, again, I think for somebody who is going to be considering making an application, they will need to understand that risk, that if in fact they're not successful and that policy is interpreted to then not have them eligible for reappointment to academic staff positions, that's a really important thing to know.
So just reading the UPG section 4 sub point A, faculty to academic staff, conversion may not be made to circumvent the decision of whether to promote to tenure or not to retain. So when I read that, my understanding for that is that probationary faculty who are unsuccessful cannot apply for academic staff positions that are the same as their faculty positions. So you're not trying to get around and have that person hired into a position after they didn't receive tenure. I don't think that's going to be the case for our academic staff positions. As those would be considered different positions, of course, there's no guarantee of getting those academic staff positions, but I do think those are different enough. So we're still working with Chase to make a clarification on that, but that's my interpretation of reading that those would be different positions. So, for example, if we weren't going through this process, and you had somebody who failed their tenure application, did not get tenure, we couldn't just go and create a position for them, an academic staff position, and say, no, we don't want you to leave. Here's a new position for you. It's basically what you were doing before, but now you're in an academic staff position. I think that's really what those guidelines are getting at, and I don't think that will apply at all with most of our situations that we're going to be dealing with moving forward. Hope that helps, Greg. And good news, the questions that we've had have answered about four or five of them that I have on my list.
Another clarification, if you are not in a position to apply for tenure, can you still apply for a tenure track position in the future, or only academic staff?
Could you repeat that again? I missed the first part.
If you've been here for less than 4 years, so you can't apply for tenure, in the new model, can you apply for a faculty position or academic staff, or only academic staff?
Oh, no, either one. And that's the whole idea, that we would have people that could be at 3.5 years, they could go into a tenure track position in the new model and go for tenure next spring, you know, if they met the 4-year minimum. So no, those positions, we would want those positions open up.
So the use of previous probationary faculty work, You're suggesting even if there's a gap or a lapse, could certainly from an administration viewpoint could be eligible, I'm assuming, as long as the academic department in which they're seeking tenure approves and views that previous work is consistent with the tenured position they're seeking.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's kind of a case-by-case basis almost. I don't think we can have a one-size-fits-all policy. So, for example, oftentimes probationary faculty will go from one institution to another institution, and they'll actually, the job's different than what they had in their previous position, and they'll actually request to have an additional year or only count 1 or 2 years or maybe 3 or 4 years towards their tenure timeline so they have more time to develop that tenure portfolio. In other situations, it might be that what they were doing matches very well, and that you just use all that time that they had in that probationary position towards the new tenure clock. So I think it's one of those things that we'll just need to work on more on an individual basis, looking at the individual situation related to the position.
That's good news, Carl, because I do think it's helpful as we look at our probationary faculty, certainly through the remainder of this year, that provides, I think, additional incentive, if any is needed, but to continue to do good scholarly work, because it's not as if it's not going to count. It very well may, depending upon, you know, each individual's opportunity down the road.
Yeah, and I think it really will depend on the work in that new position and how that fits in. So, but no, it's not. We're not looking at everybody's going to start over at zero, even if you've got, you know, if you have 3 years in as a probationary faculty, we'd want to look at that related to that position. And similarly, this is another question I might as well answer it now. If that probationary faculty member went into an academic staff position, we would also look at giving credit for that period of time for promotion in academic staff positions. So academic staff, much like faculty, go through similar type of promotional opportunities during their career. They actually match up somewhat with faculty promotion. That time as a probationary faculty member, I would expect to be counted towards that decision as an academic staff promotion issues come up for that individual, rather than saying, no, you were in a faculty position before, you don't get credit for that in an academic staff position.
Are there going to be changes to the departments, and will we know that before the end of the year as people are making some of these decisions? And if there are going to be changes, how might that play out in terms of decisions of whether previous work counts and who's making those kinds of qualifications?
Yeah, we're still working through the department questions, whether there'll be changes in departments or not. Obviously, if there is a recommendation around that, there would be a feedback process. But that would definitely be made before the end of the year. That'll be something that would be within the next few months if there's changes that are going to be made with departments. I think, obviously, this isn't the status quo, and I think we need to be flexible when we're looking at work under the previous model versus work moving forward. And I would say that at that time, let's say a probationary faculty member went to a new tenure track position, that time that would need to count towards that new position. Even if it's a different position, we would want to give some credit towards that faculty member for the time spent under the previous model. So somehow we need to think about a prorating of that time and even of the expectations for tenure under the new model would be prorated to look at the two different positions.
Carl, just to be clear, though, follow up to that statement, the individual existing departments and the existing review processes that we have will remain through the end of the year.
That's correct.
Okay.
Carl, the new academic staff positions that will be created and offered, is it internal recruitment first to fill those, or what's the plan on filling those positions?
Yeah, we'll do that for all positions. For the most part, we would do an internal recruitment first.
Carl?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dave Williams here. I joined a little bit late, and maybe you already said it, maybe it's been said before. So within the positions that are at the local level, in county offices, and that will be worked with these new area extension directors, some of those positions may be faculty, correct or incorrect?
So there's kind of two answers to that. In the short term, some of those could be tenured faculty in those positions, those county focused positions. Longer term, there could be tenured faculty positions in a county office, but they would be serving a larger geographic area. So that could be a region or a statewide specialist type position. So there's both the short term and then there's the long term, and obviously there will be a fairly long glide pattern. So in the short term, I would say we'll definitely have tenured faculty in a lot of our county offices. Long term, we'd like to maintain tenured faculty in there, but their geographic area of focus would be larger than the individual county.
And will that be something that's worked out with the extension directors in the county? I mean, will there obviously be some guidelines on the criteria needed for a position to perhaps be faculty? Is that what the thought is?
Yeah, so there's work being done on that now. So there would be specific expectations, and part of that's that geography, part of it's discipline focus. I don't think that's, I think that's really a combination of the programming part of the organization combined with the geography of the organization. So kind of bringing those two together around those faculty positions moving forward.
Carl,
This is Angie from Milwaukee County, and I need to jump in to get an answer specific to what you just said. Does that apply for the standalone counties as well?
I think it'll be it'll apply in most cases. I think within an area you could have a faculty member that's very focused within that area. I think that's going to be the exception. So in that case, a standalone county would be its own area. But I think that would be probably more the exception than the rule. But for those standalone urban counties, that may be the case where you have something where it's really focused scholarship and research around, pick a topic in Milwaukee County. That may be a situation where you have a faculty member that's really focused on one area. But I could also see that individual, I could also see faculty working across the four urban single county areas on urban issues also. So I think that's something that needs to be worked out as we go through the new model.
Would it be possible, or give us a timeline, or when we might expect to see what some of these positions might be? What's the timeline for that?
Hopefully we'll get a lot more information out about those positions within the next month. We're trying to figure out, trying to put as much detail on as we can before we release the information. I just had a meeting before this one, and I was pushing pretty hard to try to get more information out as soon as possible. Some of those specific positions, that may be a couple months away where we really need to look at what the priorities are, both from a county perspective, moving forward, and how do we start meeting those. There's just a lot of moving parts, so we just need to think about kind of the individuals within the organization, but then also the positions moving forward, and how do we match those up, how do we move forward with the new model. So can't provide a lot of specifics at this point. I think a lot of that's being worked out yet.
So when the time comes, will both faculty and academic staff positions be posted at the same time?
Not sure. That's a question that's come up, and I think we need to figure out what that process looks like. Ideally, the more information we can put on the table for our colleagues, the easier those decisions are. I've heard a lot of concern that we put the area extension directors out there when we don't have the other positions outlined yet. Hopefully we'll have some of that information out before those positions are actually filled for colleagues who may want to look at other positions within the organization. So kind of a chicken and the egg. We need to get moving. We need to fill positions. But that doesn't allow a clear opportunity or understanding of what the entire lay of the land looks like.
Carl, I have another question I just received, and I think you kind of answered it, but maybe reiterate the answer. If a person goes through tenure by 12/31 and is successful, will they need to reapply for their position under the new model? Did you hear that?
Yeah. We would need to figure out where, so if they get tenure during the fall, we need to figure out where they fit in, and that's true for all our positions, how do they fit into the new model. So not going to be the same position that they were in. That's the tenure for really that available in the new model. That's not only true for probationary faculty, obviously, that's true.
I didn't really hear that answer given the background noise.
Same here.
You're hearing background music right now.
That's because somebody put us on hold.
Barb, you're the moderator, correct?
I did not dial in as the moderator.
often the operator can find the source and correct it if someone can contact them. What is the keys I need to push? And I can see if I'm the moderator, but I don't think I am.
A star 5. Some of that is you would do it out too.
That's not working for me, so I'm not the moderator. I will go to another phone and try and call it.
I have
stated
somebody that
put
their phone on hold.
Yeah, somebody put their phone on hold and forgetting the music. I can talk really loud, but I don't know if that'll work.
Maybe we should all hang up and then call back in.
That's a good idea.
Or how about a email call saying, don't put on hold?
So are we going to call him again? Recall him?
Oops.
Let's get a different whip line number.
Let's just have everybody try. If you call into the same whip line, we're still going to have the person on who's on hold. So let me get another number for folks to call into.
One call in with the moderator number and then hit the star 5. That would mute Carl.
And we'll call in with the moderator.
So you'll panic. The operator, please stand by while I find the line causing them to shoot. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Please stand by as we have several participants on the line. Okay, I found the line causing an issue. I'll go ahead and disconnect it.
Thank you.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Wait,
you're welcome.
Okay, so we're back.
Okay, should I move on to the next question, since we've only got two ones?
I think the one that you were trying to answer would bear repeating an answer again.
Yes, that'd be appreciated.
Okay. Can we hear the question again? What was the question? So I think the question was, if probationary faculty are tenured this fall, would they need to apply for their position in the new model? What tenure will provide is that they do have a position in the new model. What that position is will need to be determined as we go through the process. So there's no guarantee with tenure that you're going to retain your current position. It's that you're going to retain a position in the new model.
So, Carl, this is Miles Alexander up in Oneida County. I think that answers the question I had. I won't be eligible for tenure this fall. And if I get a notice of non-renewal, I will have 12 months. To apply for another position, but during that 12 months, I may not have the same job I have now. Is that correct? I may, if I have a job with Wisconsin Extension, it could be someplace else, a different kind of job.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we would have to work, and again, that's going to be so much a case-by-case basis. It could be that, you know, Oneida County doesn't have a Conrad educator in a new model, so we work with you to, and work with the county to continue that position for that year. So I think it's going to be highly variable just depending on the particular situation that each individual is in.
Sure, thanks.
Yep.
Carl, question for you in regards to if this new person who's been tenured is applying for a new position in the new model and they have a faculty status because they've been granted tenure, the position that they are applying for is not a faculty position. It happens to be an academic staff position. Because they're applying for this different position, does that mean they forego their tenure they just achieved because it's an academic staff position, or do they continue with their tenure even though the position's academic staff?
If they're tenured, they would have the option of retaining that tenured faculty position in the new model. So they would retain their tenure, but there would be expectations with that around, you know, post-tenure review and things like that. So they would need to look at those expectations, but they would retain their tenure, or they'd have the option of retaining their tenure in that academic staff position moving forward.
Carl, along those lines, is it also correct then that because of the responsibilities that will come with or stay with faculty post-tenure review, even if they're not in a faculty position but retain their faculty status, that they would also retain the right to pursue faculty rank promotion? So in other words, it would be those who are associate professors would then still be eligible to apply for promotion to professor?
That's correct.
Even if their position was no longer a faculty position but academic staff?
But they still would have to meet those
right.
Standards to get that promotion. But that is
great. Great, thanks.
Well, Carl, this is Karen Nelson, doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because my understanding is with those academic staff positions is that there's going to be some specific work expectations and limitations in terms of what that person is allowed to do that's going to be determined by the deans and by the area leaders or area directors. So how will they be allowed the freedom to do the faculty work that would be expected of them if they're retaining that faculty status? Doesn't make a lot of sense, because when you become an administrator, as an example, you retain your faculty revert rights, but you're not expected to do faculty work in an administrative position.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be our challenge, is that the honoring tenure moving forward and then moving to a new model creates that tension of having a tenured faculty member in what will ultimately become an academic staff position. So I think we need to think through that more on how we approach those positions and approach tenured faculty who are in those positions to make sure that they are competitive for those promotions moving forward within the academic department. But I don't have an easy answer to that. I mean, the other option that you mentioned is that you take a leave from your faculty position if you go into an administrative position, for example. I don't know that that's a viable option moving forward, but I think that is something that will need more discussion with both the academic department and administration moving forward. Good point.
Could you clarify, are the area director positions going to be considered academic positions?
Those are limited appointments, so that would be a situation that was just described where you retain a faculty backup if your faculty going into that position but your administration, so you're on leave from the academic department.
I have another question. This is for tenured faculty, which I realize this list line is really for probationary. But if a tenured faculty member does not apply for any position and ends up with nothing, what is their timeline for notice?
Well, ideally, we would have faculty that would apply for one position or another in the new model. But in that case, then, they could be reassigned to another position within the organization, or they can leave the organization. I think those are kind of the two paths at that point.
I think the question was in regard to the time frame for non-renewal for a tenured faculty.
I don't think there is such a thing as non-renewal for a tenured faculty position.
Are contracts renewed every year?
For probationary faculty, yes.
Okay, so what does that mean for those that are having contracts renewed this year? They'll be renewed and then they can anticipate a notice in January?
If they don't get hired into the new model, that would be the case. They would be notified in January, and in most cases that would be a one-year notification period.
So should we mean they would continue to work in 2018?
They would have that option, yes.
Okay.
You've got it.
So, leading off of that same question about the contract, are we going to be receiving a renewal notice soon, or what? I mean, are the contracts going to be extended for us probationary faculty?
For probationary faculty, yes. So those, we will be issuing those contracts with the understanding that in January, that would change depending on the particular situation.
So what you're saying is that they'll get a renewed contract for essentially a six-month period up until 12/31.
Well, actually, it'd be for a year-long period because they would have a year. In most cases, they're going to have a year notice period anyway.
But you would put language in there saying something to the effect of this might change.
Yeah, we'll all have to talk with HR about that because it may change, but actually that year employment won't change because of the notification period. It would actually go through past the next fiscal year.
So you're not going to do what Foodwise did with sort of the almost, you know, every couple months renewal letters?
No.
Okay.
Hey, Carl, this is Allison Watson in Outagamie, Winnebago. I'm just curious, when these position descriptions are rolled out, you know, hopefully within the next few months, will there be salary ranges attached to them, or is that to come at a later date?
No, our goal would be to have salary ranges attached to the positions when they come out.
And another question, if a person becomes an academic staff position, will their pay level change? They're currently a probationary faculty person. They take an academic staff position. Will their pay be adjusted for the pay range for that position?
No, we would adjust. We would not lower the base pay for probationary faculty that move into an academic staff position. And then in academic staff positions, there would be there's a whole separate promotional process that they would then be eligible to go through.
Carl,
and their pay, I should point out, and it's even possible that their pay could go up moving into one of those other positions.
Regarding those open positions, is
did I understand correctly earlier that Interim Path is not going to be considered as an internal applicant for them?
That's correct.
That was hard to hear. Could you repeat that question, please?
The question was, are interim appointments going to be eligible for positions that are open internally within the organization? And the answer is no. Those would be opened up to our current faculty and academic staff and university staff. The reasoning for that is the reason we're holding vacancies is to create space within the organization to minimize layoffs. While that may sound harsh to those individuals that are hired into interim positions, just by the definition of the position, those are short-term positions. Having said that, I would expect that there will be positions open in the new model that nobody internally will apply for, and those folks that are in those interim positions are going to be very competitive for those positions because they've been with the organization, and oftentimes they may have been doing that exact job in our current model.
Carl, you've mentioned a couple of times application, or but also then reassignment. What's going to determine the difference in which positions are reassigned and what are going to be competitive applications?
Yeah, we're still working through that process. You know, some of that gets into how much different the job duties are in the job. So if it's over 50%, a lot of times that then requires that has to be opened up. Obviously, these are special circumstances, so we're continuing to work with HR to figure out the best process for us to use as we move forward.
Do you have any sense of how percentage-wise, what do you think will be reappointment versus what will be competitive application?
No, I don't. And part of that's going to be what the new model looks like and what those positions are. So I wouldn't even venture a guess on that. Part of that also, it's the new model, but then it also depends on the rules that we need to follow to move through that process. And you have to understand, this isn't something that occurs very often within the system. So some of this requires working with system legal to really look at the situation that we're in moving forward. But I wish I could provide, but I wouldn't even venture a guess on that.
Carol, can you explain a little more what's intended or meant by the 50% difference in position descriptions and they have to be opened up?
Yeah, so that's not specific to the process we're going through, but as a general rule, when you're looking at appointing somebody to a different position, if the job duties are 50% different than the previous position, then that position has to be opened up for competition. So it's not, so that's just kind of the basic HR rule, actually it was a state rule, around reappointing people to new positions. Because then the position becomes a much different position than the previous position. And I think part of, this is just me guessing, but I think part of the idea is that there may be other people that are equally qualified for that position once you start changing the duties to a certain level, and that's been determined to be 50%.
Is there a sense of how many faculty positions across the state are going to be open?
Could you repeat that? I missed that.
Is there a sense of how many faculty positions we'll be looking at in this new model?
No, we're still working on determining that. There'll be a recommendation around that, and then there'll be a feedback process to determine that. So that hasn't been decided at this point.
There are a number of, at least in Core Chief Development, I also know there's some in other program areas too, positions that are 100% county funded but are on a 133 contract now. Will the staff that hold those positions be considered internal and eligible to apply for open positions?
So they're 100% county funded, but they're our employees?
They are on a 133 contract, so I assume then that they are your employees, our employees.
Yeah, so that would be considered internal. Yeah, as long as those aren't interim positions.
Carl, earlier you addressed the salary of probationary faculty. Could you address the salary of tenured faculty? Will tenured faculty retain their current salaries moving into new positions, or will there be pay cuts?
So our part of being as fair and equitable as possible, I came out early on saying that we would not reduce the salary, base salary for colleagues in the organization when they move within the organization. So within those county academic staff, faculty positions, that we would not reduce salaries. There could be, some special situations where, somebody applies for a job that's much, much different and the salary range does not match up with where their salary is at, but I would see that as the exception. And that would probably be more administration-type positions. I don't think that's the faculty academic staff in the counties that we're talking about now. So, for example, if a tenured faculty member went into a future academic staff position in a county, they would retain their salary moving into that position. That creates a major challenge for us from a budgeting standpoint, and that's something that we just need to work through as we move forward. And that's part of the moving parts that's just difficult for us to model, but I think from a fairness and equity standpoint, I think, and a peace of mind, obviously if you think your salary is going to be dropping by $10,000 in 6 months, that's going to start to weigh heavily on you, on what you to do with your career. That has a lot of family implications, and I just wanted to remove that stress from our colleagues.
If faculty members or we apply for a position and that position isn't in the same area, will there be relocation coverage for that?
Yeah, within reason, we would provide relocation expenses.
Carl, this is Amy in Kenosha. This question is actually to some other colleagues on the line, but I guess I'm just not clear. I wanted to know what the timeline would be to submit the SRP to SRP, and who establishes that, and when can we know? I want, a hard date so I can start backing that up for my own preparation.
I'll defer to the academic department chairs on that one.
Carl, this is Greg. I think it goes back to we need to know from FPAC with your guidance and direction about when they're going to meet. And once we know what their dates are, then we as a department can work with our review committees, our standard rank promotion committees, or otherwise called SRP, to establish those review dates. I guess you could, within our department, or just thinking out loud, it would make sense that we may want to consider moving up earliest review dates to probably this summer, mid-summer, which means we're only 90 days away from potentially the first review, if that were to be the case. But in our department, we have potentially 10 probationary candidates that, if now not all may decide to apply, but and I think that's something else that should be done is query the departments, even from FPAC's standpoint, the normal review dates or the normal amount of review time may not be adequate given the numbers that we may be dealing with.
Carl, this is Kristen. I just want to clarify something. So
So we don't know what faculty positions will be available in the new model, and the goal is to convert the county-based faculty positions to academic staff. Does that essentially mean that all faculty will need to apply for a new job?
No, and I think we're working through what that process looks like. So I don't know the answer to specifically what the process is that we would use, but some of that's going to depend on the individual situation. Area extension directors and the assistant deans are going to have to really work closely on what the new positions are and how faculty fit into those positions. What are the where are the individuals at with where they want to move with their career is also part of that discussion. But I wouldn't say that everybody's going to have to apply for positions necessarily. I'm hoping that we can avoid some of that with a more streamlined process. But we're still working on trying to figure out how we do that in the most fair and equitable way possible.
This is Sarah in Oneida County. I have a question about, so up here, for example, in the family living rule, there is not a tenured faculty member up here. We're both probationary. So in the new model, if positions open up and people, tenured faculty, are interested in the positions up here, will they slide into those roles, or will there be a fair interview process so that we have a chance at staying in our communities?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question, Sarah. And we're working on trying to figure out what that process looks like, trying to be fair to both faculty and probationary faculty, and understanding that there's a lot of those relationships that have been established at the county level. I hear you loud and clear, and I think those are details that we need to work on when we develop, when we continue to develop that transition process into the new model. My goal would be to, if possible, you know, minimize the disruption we have across the organization.
Thank you.
Carl, I don't know if you have any answer to this, but another question that I received was if people choose to leave the system or are not hired into a position, and I think this is something we can add to our resource list, what about investments that have been made into the retirement system and where information on that, but I think that's a resource for another state agency, so I'm thinking we can include that in the frequently asked question list, unless you want to comment further.
Yeah, I actually followed up with Jason this morning on that, and his response was that if the employee is not eligible to retire, they have the chance to withdraw the money as a separation benefit from the retirement system, and anything that's in a tax-sheltered annuity or deferred comp program can be rolled over into a different retirement account.
Thanks for that answer.
And I should point out that we're creating a frequently asked questions document. That's what I'm going through here. Will be online, so we'll have that available for people to look at for these different types of questions.
I have a question. So as a probationary faculty member, I am working towards my scholarship, and some of that includes grants and working with producer groups to get funding and you know, going forward in the future, I'd like to assume that if I get my name on a grant and it's held in the county, that I'll still be there. But how do I approach these groups let them know the uncertainty of the future when we're doing this process?
I think the best approach is to kind of continue moving forward under the current model. And I think those types of situations we're just going to have to deal with as we move into the new model. So you may keep that position, and that would continue as planned. That's probably the ideal solution. There's a possibility that somebody else moves into that position. I mean, we deal with that somewhat all the time with people leaving the organization, You know, when I left my previous job, I had a lot of things that I had to pass off onto somebody else, grants and other things. I think we'll need to deal with that almost on a case-by-case basis. But I don't think we want to hamper ourselves in the future by saying, no, we're not going to apply for grants. We're not going to be aggressive out there around programming, funding. I think we want to continue to operate under the assumption that we'll have resources available to meet those needs moving forward.
Another question or comment that I received is there is a rumor that 1, 2, and 3 year either progress meetings or review meetings are being canceled. What advice would you give to that process?
Yeah, it's expected that reviews will continue as planned. So that kind of relates to the previous question. I don't think we're going to just stop doing everything and go into a holding pattern. Those reviews are going to be really important for those individuals moving forward, whether they're in a faculty track or in an academic staff position moving forward, or whether they're looking at different positions within the organization. So no, those have not been canceled, and those need to continue as planned. Those vicious rumors.
Carl, this is Paul Roback, current FTAC chair. I thought I'd just seek clarification with...
clear all your vacations starting in summer through the fall.
Well, I'm kind of the lame duck FTAC chair because my term comes up at the end of this... June 30th, and then I'm off the committee, but that doesn't mean I can't help facilitate the process now to ensure that there's a smooth transition and that we have meeting dates set up sooner rather than later. So it sounds like my first two responsibilities are to work with both Carl and Andrea Kuhl in kind of setting up the timely and dates, and then also to secondarily to work with the academic department chairs to figure out the number of candidates, potential candidates going forward, because that may dictate how many meetings FTAC will need, as well as identifying who the new FTAC members will be that will start serving on July 1st, because there will be three new members joining the committee.
Yeah, I agree. I think those are all things that we'll need to nail down here, hopefully in the not too distant future. As far as the list of potential candidates, I think Lisa Brennan actually has that list. That might help at least as a first pass determine what kind of workload FTAC could be looking at.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, no, thank you. Thanks for taking the lead on that.
No problem. Who's the academic department chair for Hague? Is it Greg?
Yeah, it's me, Paul. And I would, I know Lisa's awfully busy. I think if you contacted each of the academic department chairs, that would include Jeff Hoffman in CRD, Ruth Schrieffer for family living, and Chuck Preisel for youth development. We have that information within our department, and I'm sure, like me, they've looked at that list already and can give you a count probably immediately. Of potential. Again, I think it's going to, within the departments, and that's where the mentor teams are going to be instrumental in discussing with probationary faculty members. And I just share a conversation I had yesterday with Andrew, which I think is very appropriate. And, you know, early tenure consideration, especially, you know, for those who have just completed their fourth-year anniversary, the standards, Andrew reminded me appropriately, are not being lowered, and I think it's fair to assume the standards are not being risen either. They are what they are, and so it's going to be incumbent upon our department mentor teams to be have discussions with our probationary faculty that are eligible to submit, and be frank with them about whether or not they have the, you know, the accomplishments, the documented accomplishments to be successful. Just because somebody's eligible doesn't necessarily mean that they should apply. But in our case, or just by calendar, there'd be up to 10 potential candidates. I doubt that all of them will apply. But that would be very helpful to get those FTAC dates set, because I think there's a 2-week period that's, you know, then that materials have to be submitted. There's a 10-day business, you know, 2-week, 10-day business period that materials have to be received. So obviously committee members have a chance to review them, and then we work back from there with establishing SRP committee reviews. But let us know, Paul, if, you know, we can help you work with you, departments or SRP committees in any way.
And Paul, the other person would be Elmo Rowling, who's Department of Environmental Science. He would be the other department chair to contact.
Paul, this is Mike, and I understand the unofficial count is something like 20 to 25 would be eligible across all the departments for, you know, this fall. So,
Carl, this is Greg, and I just want to go back and confirm what I heard you say earlier, because I really think it is a critically important point as we counsel our probationary faculty members, and that is what I heard you say, is that there is no risk in your ability to be assigned to another position in the new organization in terms of failing to successfully achieve tenure, regardless of whether it's your first year or your last year in the tenure timeline. Is that correct? Is that what your interpretation is?
That's correct, as long as the new position is not the same as the position that the person went up for tenure for. So that's the one part that we need to do a little more research on our end on, what constitutes a different position. But again, it gets into that. It's really in place to keep people from creating new positions for people who don't get tenure. That's not what we're doing, but we just need to work with Jason and UW Legal to determine exactly what that means. But that's kind of my general reading of the guidelines at this point.
I think you understand how critically important we need that definition, because clearly what I mean now here, what I heard you say, and I know it's consistent with what you said before, but it's finally sinking in, that if, let's say, a county ag agent, probationary faculty member, who's at the last year of their tenure timeline, the fifth year of their tenure timeline, submits and is not successful, but the county wants to continue that county agent position, albeit probationary faculty, that unless there's significant change in that position description, which I'm guessing the county probably isn't looking for, but they may then, with that decision to submit and not succeed, eliminate the possibility of being reassigned into that same position as an academic staff member.
Yeah, that specific situation is what we need to explore. Those academic staff positions will be different. The question is, are they different enough? And I think that's something that, you know, we don't actually have those position descriptions at this point. So I think that's something, you know, if those positions are created independently of the faculty position, that's also probably a factor. You know, if you have that academic staff, okay, we define this position, and that's created separately from a faculty position that the person's going up for tenure, that's probably also a factor. But I think that's something, and I get exactly where you're going, and that's the exact situation. And I think we need to talk to Jason more about what that entails. And some of that may have to wait until we have the position description for the new model. But that's...
But you understand how people preparing, trying to prepare a portfolio, first the decision is, am I going to apply or not?
Correct.
And that's kind of a risk assessment given what we just discussed.
Yeah, and, so if they apply and they don't get it, are they out of a job with extension?
If their current position, you know, doesn't change much and is an academic staff position, right. And I think the other thing to ask Jason would be, is there a differentiation in that interpretation for someone who's in the fourth year, who's unsuccessful, but not because of anything they did, you know, that because of the reorganization process, that they weren't given the full tenure timeline opportunity. So is the interpretation different for somebody in their fourth year or the fifth year, or even we've got in some cases where the sixth year has already occurred, notifications because they've decided they weren't going to pursue tenure last year, and they already know when their deadline of final employment is, you know, is that interpretation different for those, for that type of situation as well? That's really critical in helping our folks decide if they're going to, if in fact they're even going to pursue the promotion.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we'll, again, I'll work with Jason and Andrea, and we'll try to get more clarification around that.
Carl, this is Jackie. Can you clarify, earlier you stated on the four-year date of when they had to have completed the 4 year, do you have that? Can you clarify that? So is it by the end of the year or by the time the SRP meets, or do you...
It's when they submit their portfolio. So that will be somewhat dependent on when SRP meets.
Okay, so
the submission of portfolio have to be, they have to have completed 4 years.
So I'm just thinking hypothetically in the Department of Family Development, we have several that won't hit 4 year until December, so they would not qualify if SRP meets in November.
No, they wouldn't.
Pardon the interruption. This is the conference operator. We had a Star Zero help request. How may I assist you?
At this point, I think the problem has been resolved. The issue was that people would put us on hold, and then we get the background music for on hold. So we haven't experienced that recently, so we hope that issue has been resolved. Thank you for checking.
Okay. You're welcome. I'll leave the conference. Thank you.
Now to hear any other questions, I'm going to go through some resources that are available to you, and then we'll check again to see if there are any more questions. Again, if you need assistance with knowing what your individual tenure timeline is, or as a mentor or a support person who is working with a probationary faculty member, Lisa Brennan is the individual in the dean's office that will prepare the document that includes your tenure timeline. If you have some specific questions once you receive that tenure timeline in regards to how you fit into the process of your tenure timeline, Andrea Kuhl, who is the Secretary of the Faculty and the Staff, and if you just do a search for UW Extension Secretary of Faculty and Staff for information, you'll get a link to her information. So she would be the person to direct specific questions about your situation or a person that you are working with, their situation. As we mentioned many times, Life Matters is contracted to support us if we need some individual support in terms of what we're experiencing and dealing with personally. the academic department chairs. We've gone through who those individuals are, so they are awesome support people and resources. And if they have questions, as you've heard several of them ask questions today, they will consult with the appropriate people to get an answer to your questions. We appreciate the questions that came in today, and we encourage you to continue to communicate with your faculty senators and your UC members, university committee members. You've heard from some of them today also. Mike Baldwin, he is Ag and Life Sciences. Chris Kamik is Family Development. Jay Zambito is Environmental Sciences. Jeff Hoffman is Community Development, and I am the 4-H Youth Development Representative at this time. So, again, please, I appreciated all the questions that came in, and hopefully all the questions that submitted today and previous to this were answered. But, again, we are resources for you to use as you have those questions and develop those questions. And the system that I have used is an anonymous submission to Carl in regards to the question. So if you have concerns about asking a question, please do not hesitate to send it to me, and I will forward it anonymously and then get the answer back to you. Carl, you want to talk a little bit about the frequently asked question document that will be developed?
Before you go on, could you tell me the name of the person? The last name is Cool.
Andrea Cool. Andrea, do you want to just talk a little?
This is Andrea Cool. I'm the Secretary of the Faculty and Staff. What else?
Just a follow-up, too. This is Tricia. Andrea's contact information was in the email along with the contact information for the department chairs for Lisa Brennan. So if you're looking back for that contact information, look back to that email. We'll also include that in the frequently asked questions, that follow-up contact information as it comes out.
Great, thanks.
And I understand the Swiss line was being recorded so that we can access it?
That's correct. And the frequently asked questions, we'll hope to get those out by the end of the week or sooner if possible.
Where will the recorded Swiss line be posted? Or we'll send that information out where it's posted?
Yeah, we'll send that information out along with the FAQs. So that'll be included in the document. That way it's all together. So we'll have the original email I sent out, the FAQs, and the recording of the WISP line all in one document.
Is it possible to ask another question about tenure timelines?
I was just going to ask that for any other questions, so please proceed.
So if we're a probationary faculty that hasn't completed even a year yet exactly, we have a probationary task, or do we currently have one, or we will not have one, or we wait and see what happens?
Yes, I know that they squeeze somebody in right before, or right while that whole interim thing is going in, I think.
Oh.
You know,
please put your phones on mute. Could you repeat that question?
Sure. If we're a probationary faculty member that has not completed our first year, do we still have a tenure timeline, or does that end, or is it going to change January 1st, or what?
Yep. So that'll depend on what position you have in the new model. So if you're successful for a tenure track position in the new model, that time would count towards that tenure timeline. So it really depends on what position you end up with in the new model moving forward.
Carl, this is Tom. Trying to think about how I advise or mentor a couple of colleagues who have 4 years in. They would be eligible for tenure this year. Kind of the question is, what advantages would there be to them if they're particularly interested in a county position? I understand county positions will not require tenure. Would achieving tenure in the next 6 months give them some advantage when applying for county positions?
if they have tenure, you know, they would be assured of a position in the new model. So that's the one advantage. If they're really looking at those county positions, a disadvantage would be that they're going to have to maintain their faculty appointment moving forward if they want to take that with them into that new position. So it's not a clear-cut case because they may not want to do the scholarship and research and work around the standards for post-tenure review or for going up for full professor at some point. That may be more difficult in some of those positions, as we discussed earlier. And we still need to work through that, so it's not an impossible task. So I don't know that it provides them a clear advantage, but it definitely provides them an advantage in that they, if they're successful in getting tenure, they do have a position within the model moving forward.
Thank you.
Yep. Again, appreciate the question, Tom. I know these aren't easy discussions to have, and a lot of times there's not a clear right or wrong answer. It really depends on where an individual's at, the particular situation, and we're going to try to do whatever we can to work with colleagues across the state.
Carl, this is Greg again. Did I understand you earlier to say that some county positions, in fact, may be or may remain faculty?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're a tenured faculty member and you end up in one of those county positions, then you would continue to be a faculty member in those county positions. The specific question was about being a faculty member in the new model within a county, and I would say that's an exception rather than the rule, and that those tenure track positions are going to be expected to cover, you know, an area, a region, or statewide in a lot of cases. So the exception to that could be an urban county, which is its own area, where you may have a specific, highly focused area of scholarship and research, but you could potentially have a faculty member that's really just focused on one county. So there's kind of two different scenarios at work. One is carryover from the current model into the new model, and the other one is the tenure track positions in the new model.
Right. So the carryover positions in the new model will be faculty positions.
If you're tenured, maintain your tenured faculty position in the new model.
Right, because that, in my own mind, it wasn't quite clear if you have a tenured faculty member, and really it's the academic freedom that is the fundamental foundation of that tenured faculty member. But if that tenured faculty member were in a non-faculty position, that just seems to be a oxymoron that, you know, completely incompatible. But if what I'm understanding you to say that tenured faculty remain in a tenured faculty position or in a faculty, then that academic freedom issue is not even consistent with the position.
That's correct. And that's until they move to a different position or leave the organization, and then that position would change.
Right, right. Okay, thanks.
Carl, I guess the reason I asked, Dave Williams here, I asked the question before, was that if, you know, let's say there's a 2 or 3 counties that had a like interest in some area of programming, let's say crops and soils generally, and they were, you know, a significant, and they come to the area regional, you know, area extension director, and they say we would like a highly skilled person to be located in our 3-4 county area.
and they would want that person to be engaged in a statewide effort of some kind, you know, along that crops and soils line, would there be the possibility of some of those being faculty type positions?
Yeah, and I think that's what we're starting to talk about in the new model, that would be, you know, somebody that's really more working statewide, working within the area, but really focused around a specific topic area. The only question I would have is to make sure that the research and scholarship is deep within that area, and that it's not, and it sounds like the way you described it, it would be. So I can see that being a potential scenario for a faculty position moving forward.
You know, and the only reason I bring it up, and this, I know this gets into the workings of, you know, IWG and the recommendations, is that some counties do, I think, value scholarship. And they value that approach to a person's professional work. And I was just wondering if that will be an option in the new model. And, you know, because in ag we have so many open positions in many areas where, you know, that I could see that as a possibility, but maybe that isn't in the new model.
Yeah, I think that's really kind of what we're looking at is how do we, and that's one of the reasons that those positions will continue to be distributed around the state, that we want to have some of that local connection along with the statewide connection around that particular programming area. So the idea is not that we want to centralize our research and scholarship in the organization. We want to continue to have that distributed. And if that's working with 3-4 counties that are interested in that position and then working statewide, that could be a really good fit for a faculty track position moving forward.
This is Barb again. The university committee is meeting with faculty senate and academic department chairs next week. As you know, many of you know, the workshop that was scheduled today for probationary faculty was postponed. That is one of the things that we will be talking about next week on that list line. If you can provide me with any feedback by email of an interest in that, please do so that we have that information, or let your academic department chair know so that we have that information when we meet next Tuesday morning.
If I could give a touch of feedback on that right now, I think if the timeline is going to be condensed and there's this one opportunity in the next 6 months to achieve tenure, I think the tenure workshop would be even more valuable.
With the new open positions, will faculty who are not probationary always have the first advantage at applying and receiving those spots?
We're still working through what that process will look like. That's not necessarily the case in our current planning, but we need to look through on what the process would look like for filling those positions, understanding that faculty do have a position in the new model.
So I just had a point of clarification. This is Jay in Green Lake County. So let's assume that somebody gets a non-renewal letter January 2018. Would that, and they don't qualify for tenure, you know, because of the timeline. For the next 12 months then, would that individual still maintain their assistant professor faculty status for that last year during that notice period?
Yes, they would.
Thank you.
Carl, does that 12 months non-renewal period begin on January 1, or does it begin on July 1 of this year?
So it's when the notice would go out. So it would be, you know, I wouldn't say January 1 for sure, but sometime more towards the end of the year as we start building out the model.
Okay.
Another question, and this one relates to promotion to professor. What will the position be on promotions that have been that have made it through SRP, FTAC, and professor committees, which actually is a little different. If they've been through professors is a separate review process that doesn't engage SRP and FTAC for the professors committee. And with that said, will promotions from associate professor to professor continue to be supported?
Yes, we'll continue through the normal process through the fall of the year, and then that'll continue beyond that. So we'll continue to have that promotional opportunity recommendations moving forward.
And I think, can it be assumed, Carl, that the salary adjustment for that rank promotion remains the same?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, thanks.
Will the new model include part-time positions? Because there are a number of part-time positions at this time.
We haven't discussed that, but I think that, again, is working with individuals on a case-by-case basis. Obviously, we're not going to try to, say everything has to be full-time. There's situations that come up for shorter or longer periods of time, so we're going to need to work with individuals on a case-by-case basis for those positions.
Could you please repeat where the recording of this will be available?
We will send out an email, or we'll send out we'll send out a document that has the original email from me, the frequently asked questions, the questions that have been asked today, and the ones that we've received prior to today, and we'll have information on how to connect to the recording of this WIS line.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you,
sounds like we have good music going on, so hope everybody has a great rest of your week, and thanks for all the great questions.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.